Welcome, listeners, to this episode of Listen, Christy. I'm Liz.
Christy.
And today with us, we have a very special guest. Christy, I'll let you do the honors.
Probably the only family member that I still tolerate, besides the one I gave birth to, in my family, my favorite cousin, Coley, who is from Lafayette, Louisiana, but also has relatives, multi-generation in from Fredericksburg. Coley and I are cousins, and we're the same age. So from birth on, it was both of our siblings are at least a decade older than us. So we were like brother and sister, you know, and our moms being sisters and best friends. His dad, who I have had such just probably one of my first male crushes, and I don't mean that in a sexual way, but just the way he could just light up, and he was so charismatic, and it didn't matter if it'd been 5 minutes since he'd seen you or 5 months. Come over here and tell me what's been going on. He was so enthusiastic, you know, could sell ice to Eskimos, just the most charming human being. And so Coley's daddy's family founded Fredericksburg in the 1800s.
Yes, they were
mid-18.
Some of the original settlers. And I found out a new fun fact on this trip. It was the late 1800s. And the original guy, I think it was from Denmark, originally had land on the other side of the Pedernales River that was closer into Fredericksburg. But when they got there, the Indians were very aggressive on that side of the river. So they just stopped where they were and went back to San Antonio and got a different deed. They were like, we're not going to cross that river. We're going to die. And he ended up getting killed, they think, by the Indians because, you know, it's just tough times. Some of those original little buildings have these little slits like you see at prisons today with the little tiny vertical windows. And that's what they would point the guns out of, you know, to protect themselves, like you see in the movies. And that's how it was, you know, back in the day. It was tough. And it's pretty fascinating because if you look at the names of the original founding families, it's pretty cool because it's the same last name that you'll see here in Louisiana at Roberts Cove, which is a little town north of Rain, Louisiana, a very German community. And if you go farther east to Des Allemands, which is French for the Germans, it's the same last names. Apparently there was some company that would, you know, in a good German way, populate the world with German people. So they would drop cousins from one family at one site, and they go down and they drop more off and drop more off the farther they would go. So anyhow, they have my dad's family has been there forever. And it was funny because my dad did everything he could to get off that farm. He never wanted to stay on the farm.
But your connection to fame is your relatives own Luckenbach.
They did. All of that land.
They started at Aunt Marge.
That's right. And I walked away before the days of 23andMe. They, in typical German fashion, documented everything. So I walked, this time we left town with the book of all of the people and how they were all related and all of the different pieces of property over there. And at one point, it was all one big piece of land that subsumed Fredericksburg, Luckenbach. And it was a pretty neat place. But it was an outpost. I mean, it was in the middle of nowhere. And it was like that growing up, Christy. Whenever we'd go to Texas, if you ended up in Fredericksburg, you did something wrong. Because it was like me.
But now it is probably, you know, after Austin kept getting weird and weirder, people wanted to find new places to go. And Fredericksburg, I would say, is probably in the top two or three destinations to see in Texas. Everyone loves it. It used to have maybe one or two wineries. And Texas wineries, they're not going to be winning any, Robert Mondavi Awards. There's now over, 200 outside of Napa. Fredericksburg has more wineries. Now it's about to surpass Napa.
Yeah, and with good reason. I mean, I think that weather in California has been unusual. And of course, the regulatory environment is such that a lot of people are, we see it here in Lafayette, a lot of people are just leaving, you know, they're looking for a more pro-business environment. And what we see actually at Fredericksburg, and again, I'm not local there, so I go regularly, but not as much as I'd like. A lot of the wineries actually will have their grapes are grown out in West Texas. You know, it's a much more suitable environment for grape growing. And then they will sell it all at Fredericksburg. So they've started now introducing vines and things like that that are great. And for a long time, they had problems with something called Pierce's disease, which was if you have citrus growing near a water source with grapevines, there's a certain bacteria that's carried by some bug, and it can really wipe out grapevines. But I think A&M and University of Texas have come a long way in varieties of grapes that are resistant to that, which is a really good thing. So now you're seeing a lot more healthy grapes that are actually being grown on site.
A&M is the agricultural school.
Yes.
UT just drinks it. They're not agricultural.
So, but would you classify and say, like, to people who don't know or haven't been to Texas, that Fredericksburg is a mishmash of like Austin meets Napa if you want to get away from
definitely. Austin meets it's absolutely gorgeous.
And San Antonio. Where we are, you're about an hour north of San Antonio and about an hour west of Austin. So you've got all of those big city populations that are conveniently located near
family
Fredericksburg.
Family friendly.
Absolutely.
Right. There's no crime there. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. They have the Pernalis that runs through it. Again, if you want to be in Austin or San Antonio, 45 minutes to an hour.
Now, do you feel like it's more of like a destination place or, a great place for people to pick up and move? Because you also have property for sale there, right, Coley?
Well, they do. It's both. I mean, it really is booming, and it really is becoming both. You know, for a long time, it was a weekend town. Basically, it had a population of 11,000 for 4 days a week, and then for 3 days a week, a population of 111, from everybody coming up to get away for the weekends. But now there's more and more developments. People are locating there. They've built some beautiful developments, and they're doing a lot there to improve the whole week, 7 day a week kind of activity. So you're seeing
what's
more
the population about now?
There. And the schools are great. I think the population's about 11,000 and change population. So I remember we saw a sign and we were kind of shocked. We thought it was bigger than that. But again,
and do you find that property's gone through the roof? Just
really
what you've
has.
Seen over the past 5 years.
Sure, it really has. And it's one of those things too where there's a lot of fly by night developers that kind of pop in from faraway places claiming they're going to do all this stuff and then they kind of disappear. But the ones that are there that are legit are really making some incredible developments. And they're doing things to embrace affordable housing as well. Probably as I appreciate it from somebody that's just a layperson, a visitor, they traditionally have had an issue with affordable housing. And then with the price of energy where it is, it becomes cost prohibitive for the folks to drive there from faraway places. So Fredericksburg has been very proactive in making the community welcoming and accommodating to a diverse population. So that's been really cool to see. It really is. It's a tremendous change because again, when we were kids, when we went up there, it was tough. And when we first started going up there, that little house that we have by the Pernalis, mm-hmm. It was run down. I got snakes living in the rafters and it was tough place, but now it's really cool. And so for us, it's always fun because to go back and know that you're sitting with generations of people that have been there, it's nice. You feel like you have a connection there. And the place is so welcoming. I don't care who you are. And when you show up there, your family, it's kind of the culture there. It's a friendly culture that's very welcoming.
Somebody else, Matthew McConaughey's wife, she just did an interview literally 2 days ago, and I think she talked about just the culture of Texas as a whole and how she feels the authenticity of people and just the welcoming environment. And again, I think like Christy has said, the way that College Station has just exploded very similarly will eventually just be attached to Houston someday.
Houston North.
And now the high-speed train.
Right.
the fact that they're putting like the development capabilities and what's happening so fast and this boom of population from all these other states. And but to actually watch it in real time kind of almost sped up, don't you feel?
Absolutely. And, you know, places like Frisco, I don't know if you've ever spent any time there outside of Dallas, but 25 years ago, it was just flat land. And there was one knockoff fake Dairy Queen and just a little volunteer fire department, like if one of the ranches caught on fire. It's blown up. If you just go to Frisco, I mean, there's $5 million houses sprinkled everywhere. All the pro football players, you know, they built the big, the star, the big Dallas Cowboy training facility out there. And so all the, you know, the homes that they're building and the developments. And my friend owned or bought off the courthouse steps the original Box Ranch, which if that doesn't mean anything to anyone, it will when I tell you that was the original ranch on Dallas. So when you watch the opening of Dallas, the big Georgian that they zoomed in on. So the first year and a half, they shot the series there and then the house burned down. So they had to find another ranch, but they still use that same opening. Well, the gentleman close Box that built it was an oil business. He went broke in the 80s and Baxter came along and people were like, what are you going to do with that? It's just a bunch of land out, you know, just, I mean, well, it's not ever going to be anything. We'll wait and see. He basically, it's about 10,000 acres that he bought. So he had the foresight to see, and it's all commercialized. And it's worth over $1 billion now.
Wow. Wow.
So I don't want to quote because I'll get it wrong, but he just basically of the 10,000, I think he carved out like 120. No, just to sell off to a developer.
Oh.
And it was a couple $100 million. I mean, it's just unbelievable how in our lifetime, how we've seen things just in the past 10 years in College Station. I'll look at timelines that, you know, buildings popping up and things like that. And, I don't know. It just blows me away.
You're right. And I think that's where I really enjoyed going back. Like for this eclipse, it was fun to go back because, you know, a lot of the developers over there call people like my aunt and uncle the OGs, and that stands for Old Germans. And they were the ones that, you know, they've been living there forever. And it's kind of fun because when you look at the contrast of the development, then you're hanging out with someone who's 93, remembering back, you know, what it was like to be a child there. It's kind of a neat way to see, you know, you bookend the experience with somebody that was there when it was nothing, in their perspective of what it looks like now.
Well, I really like this chance to dive into the archives. I mean, if you've been hanging around with this guy since you're, you know, old enough to know better, you have to have at least one or two good stories from the childhood memories.
I know I do. I mean, look, Christy was, she and I were like the runts of the litter because we were 10 years behind everybody. So we were sort of a support group.
He's so polite. The runts.
But
you little accident.
But no, when I was a kid, I remember we used to go visit Christy, and she was like the rodeo queen. She would be running those barrels. The cowboy hat would go flying off. She'd have the lasso. And I'm just like, man, these people in Texas are freaking crazy.
But Coley, of course, is the concert pianist, is the artist, is the lawyer, is the, everything that I couldn't stop long enough to concentrate. And,
well, he can't, you know, give himself a blowout like you can either. So
that's true. But I remember we had driven to, this is maybe 2-3 years ago, we'd driven to Fredericksburg to look at your property. And I said, look, he says, I'm thinking about selling it. And so the people that I had introduced him to potentially list it, said, hey, he said, well, I'm going to come in and be at my cousin's ranch, and then we're just going to drive over and meet you guys there. And they said, no, we have a plane. You can ride with us, and we'll even send the plane to pick up your wife. And so Elise is like, no, don't get me. I got things to do. I don't need to be in y'all's mess, and y'all go on and play in Fredericksburg. And I said, Coley, we're not taking that plane. He goes, we're not? And I said, no, we don't want to ask what kind of plane it is. That would make us sound rude and stuck up. But I mean, we're going to get on some puddle jumper.
Well, and you left out the part where you were like, I only fly jets.
Well, they better have two pilots. They better have two engines.
Argus Platinum safety rating.
Yes. And, you know, that you want to know that if you, I know somebody that was killed not long ago, you know, around the Fredericksburg, Kerrville area. And I said, and you have kids? I have a child. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And if your daddy was here, he would say the same thing. You don't get in a plane with somebody that, you know, you don't know. I said, we'll drive. It'll be fine. So we, what's it like 4.5, 5 hours or something?
Yeah, I haven't been.
Oh, you drove through it on the way back from West Texas.
Right, but yeah, I don't remember.
So it's outside of San Antonio. So let's just say it's 4 hours. And so anyway, we're waiting there at the FBO to pick up the people. And all of a sudden, I see this plane. And I'm like, no, it didn't put out it. No. Landing gears down. He goes, Coley goes, huh, that looks like a Gulfstream. Yeah, it's not them. It's not them. I'm thinking, please pray to God, don't let this be them. And then I see the stewardess get off and put the red thing out at the end of the stairwell. See the first pilot get off, a second pilot, and then I see our people. He goes, that who we're meeting? Yeah, that's who. Looks like a nice plane to me.
Well, we
should have taken the plane. So
you can't get back those 8 hours in the car memories.
I know. So as he is taking a continuing education class, I think out of Harvard, wasn't it?
No, you were doing it at Washington University of St. Louis. I was getting my LLM.
That's almost Harvard. So he's taking this nighttime class, and he's like, look, you have to drive because I've got to get on this call for like an hour. And, you know, so I can't remember the teachers or the professors rattling out of all kinds of stuff. I'm not really listening. And I'm grandmaing along trying to see in the dark. And he says something, the guy said something and about deceptive trade practice. That's all I heard. And he goes, well, Coley, what's your thoughts? And he's like, oh, that panicking you get. And he puts his, I said, tell him it pays 3-1 in court. And he goes, well, and he, of course, he put it eloquently. And, you know, and if this is your situation, it pays 3-1 in court and you just have to make sure. And he goes, excellent job. And I was like, I miss my calling. Well, I miss my calling.
Verified she was right.
Yeah. No, she was right. And the funny thing was, is how to do the specific discussion had to do with horse training and
oh, yeah, that's
taxation
right.
For the horse industry. And Christy's like rattling off answers because she knows it already. She's lived it.
So not because I'm a lawyer.
So, yes, thank you, Christy. I plagiarized your knowledge and I got the credit for that. And I it was all recorded, too. So it's proof that I got thanked for such a good response. And it was not my response. It was Christy's.
Oh, wow.
So
thank you. We just had the best time, and I'm glad we didn't fly.
Yeah, no, great. And the other thing that was funny was at the trip, there was one. Okay, so we're out there, and I think we're looking around. Our property's in between Great Creek and the Pedernales River. And we were down at the Pedernales side where it's gorgeous, and they got deer. All of a sudden, this Dooley pickup truck comes flying up on us.
Yeah.
And this girl jumps out, you know, pistol in hand. And I'm like, oh. That's my cousin, Patience. And I'm like, thank God she's acting patiently because she came armed. She's like, she didn't know who was on the property. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is Texas. They shoot to kill here.
Yeah.
But, oh, like you were about to get in trouble for trespassing on your own land?
Yeah. She didn't know that we were there.
Yeah, we were just walking around casually looking at deer. The next thing you know, you're staring down a barrel, you know, and it's like, who are you? And I'm like, oh, Patience.
If there's any human, if there's any producer that needs their own reality show, it's Patience.
Oh, no question. And
yeah, because, I mean, just hunter, fisherman, goes in noodling, congrats. She's always holding up a prize buck or something she's skinned or fishing. She's amazing.
All right. No question. Well, I need to meet patients.
She could have lived in a whole different time during the 1800s, 1883 or whatever Taylor showed. She'd have been just fine.
Okay.
That's that whole family's like that. I mean, it's truly amazing because they all live right next to each other on this farm that's been there forever. And, you know, the night that we were there, they were having a big camp out before the eclipse. She and her children were going to sleep on a trampoline. And they started a big bonfire next to this little shed. And they were having fun. We left. And the next day I come back and the trampoline's destroyed. I'm like, what happened? They're like, oh, you know, we got the jumping on it and it just completely collapsed. And she was already taking it down, got her tools out and was taking it. Meantime, I go in that little shed with Willie because he wants to go find some old pictures that's in a box. So to get to the bottom of the box, we had to lift this other heavy ammo box off the top. And I'm like, man, what is in this? This is so freaking heavy. He goes, oh, gunpowder. I'm like, gunpowder. That's how they roll. So
one of the other things that's kind of been rolling around in the back of my head that I like your perspective on is just at this phase and time in your life, have you come to any like revelations? Because Christy and Reagan, we always talk about it. And from a woman's perspective, like what are the differences that life and maturity have taught you about, okay, maybe I'm not going to care as much about this, but from a man's perspective and, you know, trying to teach your children, what do you feel like has evolved for you maybe in the last 10 years?
Oh, gosh. So, you know, the biggest thing is letting go, right? If you're a parent, your job is to become obsolete. And as a parent, you don't want to be obsolete. You want to be needed. And so that is where I'm at now, is watching our kids go off to college now. It's like, all right, now I'm just going to enjoy my oncoming obsolescence as my kids are carrying their own batons and running their own races. And there was a few things that I thought were kind of neat. It's like I had a school project once where, no, it was a Cub Scout project, and I had to build a Pinewood Derby car. And my dad took over the project, like got sanding tools out and went crazy. He made this awesome car that I hated. And my mom, who's a hoarder, doesn't want to throw everything away. So dig it out of my trash can and then bring it back to my house when I'm not looking and put it back at my house. So I tried to throw this little car away for years because to me it represented total PTSD. Because I was like, it was supposed to be my little project. Next thing I know, my dad's just like pushed
me
off.
It's his project.
It's his project. And he made a great looking car. And it was funny because now I can't find that thing. It's somewhere buried in the other trash my mom brought back to my house. And I'll find it one day. But it was a telling thing for me that later when my kids had their school projects, I went nuts on a couple of them, did the exact same thing my dad did. And I realized it gave me a perspective that you realize for so long, you're almost mad at your parent for like hijacking your deal. And it's not until you're a parent and you realize that moment of saying, hey, I can actually help. I actually have a skill that can do this. And you get carried away, not because you want to take it away from the kid, but it's like one of those weird moments where you feel relevant in your kid's life that you can do something. And I had to rethink that little car. Now I'm looking for it because forever I wanted to throw it away. I hated it. And now I'm like, I get it. I understand what that was about. And it wasn't about trying to say, look at my artistic ability. You have none. It was more about wanting to help in a way that you're suddenly shocked as a parent to think, wow, I can actually do this and I can help. And so that to me was a revelation, you know, like if I could go back and I'd probably rethink the school projects.
Well, it's a very powerful thought. Just that one thing can unlock so many memories, probably of other things that you had as a kid. And, oh, well, maybe I just interpreted that wrong, or that's not what they intended. Right.
100%. 100%. Then the next thought that flows from that is, well, what else did I misinterpret? Apparently, I must have misinterpreted a lot. If I got that one little event wrong, well, then you have to rethink it all and say, where did I go, you know, off course? And plus, like when I go back to Fredericksburg and I hear these stories about how hard life was, you know, for a long time, I thought my dad was just this crazy optimist, like psycho, who was this, you know, positive thinking guy.
I would have loved him.
Yeah.
My kind of guy.
He could rattle off Napoleon Hill quotes better than anybody. Every freaking, I don't care if it's Ogmandino, whatever, he had it all memorized. And that was his life. He lived that life of, if you believe it, and if you work toward it, your dreams will become your destiny. And he had an oil company that went to the
Wall Street, public traded off of nothing more than that attitude and hard work with a great team. I mean, if you ask, you know, there was a lot of that too. And when you see the abject poverty that these people lived in, I mean, you eat what you kill, literally. And it wasn't cool to grow up in Fredericksburg. Germans weren't exactly liked. They were kind of blamed for the world wars. And yeah, so a lot of these German communities just ended up where they were because nobody wanted them. Well, now everybody wants to go there with their Harleys and go to the cool German fest. And you know, now they've become cool. But back in the day, farm life was pretty tough. One of the things that I love at Fredericksburg is they still have this little tiny smokehouse that my dad hated the farm, hated farm life. And one day it was harvest and he decided to do what he wanted to do, which is always what he did. And he decided to go fishing. And his uncle locked him in this little smokehouse, which is not much bigger than a doghouse, where they would hang all the sausage and smoke it. And he left him in there for like a day or something like that. And when he opened up the smokehouse to get my dad out to teach him a lesson, my dad had taken a bite out of each piece of sausage and the whole freaking, just to make the point of F you, I'm okay. And, but that's how they, you know, that's how it was. They, you'd get locked in a little place if you didn't do stuff. So, you know, times were pretty hard. And so it made me rethink a lot of the stories that I've heard from his childhood. Man, you think our parents are crazy. Back then, when there was no internet and no Google and Facebook for people to out people, there was all kind of crazy stuff going on those farms in the middle of nowhere because it was tough times. And so I can see now the perspective of how do you cope through such tough times? Well, he developed a great psychological ability to always find the upside, no matter how dark something was. He was always looking for the upside and how to turn it into a positive. And that's something that, you know, as you look, as I get older, the other thing I think about is, you know, we took it for granted when Christy and I were kids.
Right.
These guys over here were drilling oil wells. They were walking into fires to put them out, you know, Red Adair. Mm-hmm. They were crazy. Well, we didn't know any different. We thought everybody did that.
We thought that was the norm.
Right.
Yeah, everybody starts oil companies and everybody, I mean, and it's not until you have kids and you look back and realize the insanity of the risks that these people took. And that was the oil business. It was, if you had the courage to do the risky thing, you know, then you
and maybe that's it too, is like how much more courage was needed at that point with so much adversity on so many levels, like health and finances, whatever. And then having huge families, like I'm going to go out and create this dynasty basically of a family while creating a company out of nothing.
Right.
And tomorrow might suck, but the next day the sun will come up and we'll try again.
And you may drill 15 dry wells right in a row.
That's right.
And you've got to go out on the 16th and go find funding or whatever with the same enthusiasm as if it's Spindletop.
And even if you hit the well, it can prematurely deplete. Right. So you never really cross the finish line into a zone of uncertainty. That's a fiction. There's always.
And that's why they call them wildcatters.
That's right. And so it takes a special kind of mindset. And look, Christy, your mom and mine are not much different, right? They came from also abject circumstances that were difficult. And, you know, I remember there was times when I think it's back at like Y2K. That was the last time that end of the world people were like, oh, my God, the world's going to end. My mom was so funny. She was like, I don't care. Computers can go. I know how to wring a chicken's neck. I can grow my own food. I don't care. I'm like, man, you guys. Girls, they all are courageous, man. They just, fear was just not, it was an alien concept, you know, because
there's no room for it.
Okay. Right. How much of the qualities of our mothers do you think are passed on, especially to our girls?
Oh, tons of it. It's amazing to see it, but I think the creativity, the artistry, the courage, the confidence, and that comes from, like in my case, both sides of Elisa's mom's family. It's the same. It's just, there's something about strong women in those families that is, it's tremendous. You know, it's, I definitely see it. I see it. And it's a beautiful thing, right? It's fun to see how those characteristics get picked up.
Now, I have to say, when all of your children were applying for college, how much did you get involved on the app process versus we want to go here. Hey, we'd like to look at this. And you go, you really don't want to go there. That's, you know, I mean.
You know, it's interesting. We got involved. I mean, every parent, I think it's impossible, at least the way it used to be. I don't think it was possible to be uninvolved if you really want to go to these super aggressive schools, you know, like Stanford's and MIT's and those kind of schools. And when you see the level of gamesmanship that was going on at that time, I mean, literally, there's closet industries of these people paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to their private college admissions coach. Some of the families would, you know, they would procure some patent. You know, if somebody had a patent, there's a whole underground industry of people selling a patent. So your kid, when they apply to college, they have their name on a patent. And it's like, when you see that level of gamesmanship going on, it's hard to imagine a world where parents just aren't involved. I'm not saying it can't happen, but it's so much. And so much was expected of these kids. They had to be everything on the field. They had to be everything in the classroom. They had to be everything in leadership. They had to be a musician. It's like, when you're trying to balance all of that stuff with just the administrative side of trying to get the apps out, the essays written, the deadlines, and the early decision, what is it? The other one, EA, ED, I forget what EA is.
Early
acceptance. It's just so much, you know, like we were talking earlier about the ROTC scholarship. How do people know that the window typically opens in June? Don't wait till December to do that. Do that in June before you start applying to college, because you might get a scholarship in October and you can put that on the college app. Right. And that's a tremendous thing to put on the college app, but nobody knows that. So right. How would a kid... So to that extent, we did get involved, you know, just on the administrative side. And a lot of it, we learned from their soccer. You know, the biggest thing that we did for our kids, you know, we learned from a soccer coach, which was just dedicate an email address to the kids so that all of the college junk emails and all of the important ones go to a separate email account on Google. You know, that was like a huge deal just to help the kids stay on top because they had so much information coming in. But the bulk of it, you know, their applications and essays and stuff like that, that was really unique to them. And they were headstrong enough. They inherited enough of our mom, Christy, and our dads and Elise's mom and dad that they were headstrong enough to say, F you, I'm going to do it my way. And
right.
Yeah, let that happen, you know? And
my daughter, I think, when does the app portal open? It was like April,
it was like
August 15th.
August, yeah. And she got up at what, 2 o'clock?
2 o'clock,
in the morning?
That morning for when it opened at, let's say, 4 a.m.
To start,
she was going to be there and be waiting. She had all of her
applications ready to go, ready to launch.
Yeah, to be the first
one. And still, I mean, we'll let her talk about it on her episode. Yeah. But you know, it's shocking to me the amount of knowledge you need to have just to have a hope and a prayer, really, to get into a college. Because sometimes it's not about your GPA.
Mm-hmm. No,
most of the time it's not.
Right. It really is. And again, a lot of it's changed because of COVID and all of that. But, you know, I almost hesitate to say this, but, you know, truth will set you free. I think a lot of people after COVID have kind of had a wake up call of saying, do I really need to be in a bricks and mortar environment?
Right.
In a different time zone when I can just be home and I can go to school here locally. So I think that there has been a change in approach. And should be, you know, I mean, the reality for some of these schools like Stanford, and I don't mean to diss them, but a lot of them, the undergrads are just to make money. It's really the grad schools at these places where the great doctors and the great physicists and the researchers come out of the grad schools. And, you know, so it's like, you know, to get to those resources, well, they got that doesn't come free. So how do you do it? You get tons of people to pay applications fees and pay $100,000 for tuition to keep everything rolling. And so with all of that, you know, it's definitely it's just it's an unfortunate state of the industry that there's just that's the industry is built from a culture of fear, and it's built on a sales pitch that if you go to this college, then that equates to this upper level of excellence and success.
Yes, you know. Your life will be so much more blessed.
And you're going to hang with the next. You're going to hang with the next Elon Musk, and you're going to be because you're at this great place. And that's a fiction. And
you know, so much of it, you know, the reality is you're going to come out of college with a lot of debt, you know, unless you're smart about it. And that's where, I go back to the Air Force. I just think any of those military services are incredible. And seeing what the benefit is and kids that can come away, and if they have to give back, and that's typically how those work, a year for a year. So if they pay 4 years of tuition, then you're going to get back 4 years of service. And, you know, I love it. In my mind, I can't imagine a better way to earn back the tuition than in serving, you know, this institution that has protected that institution where you got educated.
Right.
And let's face it, it's also a job, you know, so you get not only do you get your school paid for, but you're going to get a job at the end of it. And
what is a different level of discipline that other children who don't do it aren't learning?
That's right. And so to me, in the absence of figuring out some way to go through school with some grant scholarship, something like that, if you're going to come out with debt, then there really ought to be a better truthful statement to a lot of these schools that sell this image of you're going to be all these great things if you go here. They ought to say, you know, disclaimer, you're also going to probably have six figures of debt, and you're probably going to have, you know, a disaster trying to figure out what to do, because there's a million that be coming out of these schools that are, we won't talk about that. So, you know, with all of that said, though, I do think that things have, and I do think things have improved. I think if anything, that Springer scandal, and I think that COVID, you know, Common App, as I recall, right around the time of COVID, had merged with Michelle Obama's foundation. And I think rightfully the idea was the application process had been so jaded in favor of folks that could game the system. I mean, that's what it was about. You know, you could pay your private coach to improve your ACT scores. You can pay your private coach to do this. And before you know it, the kids that legitimately went to class and worked hard, they're lost in the shuffle because everybody else has gone on for these exceptional storytelling applications because they had the Rick Springers and everybody else coaching them through it. And so I do think that a lot has changed to level the playing field. But it still doesn't solve the problem in that, you do have this situation where there's still this industry that's built on anxiety and it's built on fear, and it ticks, it pushes all the right triggers for parents that want the best for their kids, for kids that want a big future. They've got that down to an art, and people will pay for it. And that's a big, long discussion that relates to the eclipse, by the way. I don't know how we got to college apps. And
well, I just am getting the notification that we have to wrap to get ready for our next filming. Yes. But is there anything else that you want to just touch on or give?
No, I mean, look, thank you. You know, again, I don't know how we got through the intro part. I think that if it helps Reagan, I think we covered that. You know, my name's Coley Branson. And
I'll give her all that.
Yeah, named after a toilet. You can give her that part too.
Okay, Sinclair. If she tells everybody, we went to LA and she said, yes, I'm Sinclair Schiller. I'm named after a gas station. I was like, I could have named you Bucky. Just be appreciative.
Hey, look, we found in that list of all the old Germans that we call them OGs, we found all of those names. There were some awesome names. Our kids would have been bullied on the playground.
Oh no, see, Sinclair has such name envy because her cousin is named Tolson. And she said, Mom, you know that comes from Tolstoy. And I go, oh, okay. She says, he got the cool name, Mom.
Yeah.
Well, that's also a family legend. I've since found out, I don't think that that's true, but we've carried that legend.
Don't tell her that. She's still living in her gas station hell of being named Sinclair.
Yeah, the story I was told was that Tolstoy, their family came over here and they anglicized their name to Tolson, so it would mitigate the fact that they were Jewish. And so supposedly that's where all this creativity and writing comes from. And boy, nothing like finding out that was probably a lie. What else did you lie about?
That's why you still haven't done your 23andMe.
Well, your birthday last year, I sent you a 23andMe, and you would have thought I sent you anthrax. Oh my God. Oh my God. I just don't know what I'm going to put this up. I can't look at it another day. And I was like, just spit on it and send it in. No.
Well, maybe one day I'll have the courage to send off the evidence for them to use. That's one of my conspiracy theories, right? Is if you send off your DNA, you may never know until they call you one day and say, here's where we put
Fed
you.
Feds show up at your door.
Here's where we put you at the scene of the crime. Maybe that's that law school stuff in there. You say, man, why don't you give off that? But, you know. But my cousin did that, by the way, and more people are doing it. So actually, I think now it's become more of procrastination than it has been.
I didn't do it for so long because I didn't want to find out about all those unknown relatives I didn't need to have.
Well, in my case, I think it could help confirm those family legends, Christy, because maybe, who knows, maybe you find out you're related to Leo Tolstoy. Maybe that wouldn't have been a lie. So maybe there's a reason to do it yet.
Versus Leo Machigamba.
That's right.
Well, Coldy, we have absolutely loved having you on the show, and thank you for coming on.
Well, and thank you for having me.
This is really a segment where we say goodnight, Lucy.
Oh, yeah. Goodnight, Lucy.
Goodnight, Lucy.